Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show. I'm your host, Dan Breslin, and this is episode 155 on deferring taxes on any highly appreciated asset sale with Brett Swartz. I know you're probably thinking, this is just another 1031 exchange episode, as that's what I thought when Brett and I first started talking. While we do touch on the 1031 exchange here today, that is not actually the meat of our discussion. About halfway through, if you listen closely, my head starts spinning a bit as I fully grasp this tax deferral strategy afforded using the deferred sales trust. Imagine selling a property and having $1 million profit, and then being able to roll that $1 million profit into a variety of assets instead of being limited by real estate only. You'll likely remember my past episode on the 1031 exchange. I completed and then bought an apartment building, and my situation created by the deadlines of the 1031 exchange caused me to become a motivated buyer. A motivated buyer is not necessarily the best circumstances for a prudent investor, a conservative investor, to make a well-placed real estate investment or any other investment for that matter. Today's show is a real eye-opener for me personally on the potential to defer taxes for me and even my heirs down the road, whether it comes to selling real estate or selling a business or who knows what the future holds. Buckle up, because Brett literally races through this topic.
All right, Brett, welcome to the REI Diamond Show. How are you doing today?
Good, Dan. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, for sure. So we're end of March here. We're in some very interesting times when people's asset values might not seem or be as high in the real marketplace right now as they ordinarily would, which we're going to get into talking about dealing with some capital gains and stuff. But, you know, just to kind of provide the backdrop as to where we're going, I'm sure we'll touch on some of the timing in the market. But I think this is more of a relevant topic no matter what the time of our economy is. And I think people would gain value and benefit. But so people understand, can you give a little bit of a background of what you did and how you got there and what your business looks like today?
Absolutely. Thanks, Dan. So most high net worth individuals, and especially those who own commercial real estate or businesses or high-end primary homes, they struggle with capital gains taxes, and it's somewhere between 30% and 50% of their gain when they go to sell their assets. But we use a deferred sales trust to eliminate the need for a 1031 exchange and give them a passive or active income stream that's diversified, that's liquid, that's debt-free, so they can create and preserve more wealth. My background started back really kind of in 2006 to 2010 in that time frame. I was at a company called Marcus & Millichap, helping people buy and sell investment real estate. In particular, I focused on multifamily and here in Northern California. I was, you know, kind of new to the business, newly married, had a baby at home with my wife, and I was just trying to figure out a way to make it in the marketplace in a very highly, highly competitive world. 2008 hit, and that was kind of the big wall. I went from making just a little bit and getting the business going to making, you know, flat out nothing. And I had to figure out a way to support my family as well as add value in a situation where people weren't really transacting as much as they were before. And so I did what every good entrepreneur does. I got two side jobs, and I just started to learn more and more and more. I worked at Cheesecake Factory. I worked at a basketball tournaments on the weekends. And so by day, I'd make phone calls and learn at Marcus & Millichap. And by night, I'd be at a restaurant on the weekends. And I did that for 2 years to keep my dream alive. And I love the business so much, and I wanted to figure out a way to keep it going. But also during the daytime, we wanted to figure out a way to help our clients who also were hitting this wall. And that wall was too much debt, having overpaid for properties, and some had lost everything in the 08 crash. And so we had to figure out a way, how do we help them escape never having to feel trapped by capital gains tax ever again, to never have to face this situation ever again. And at just that right time, my manager brought in a gentleman to speak on the deferred sales trust. And so I'm sitting in the Marcus & Millichap office in Sacramento, and he starts to talk about this concept that you don't have to use a 1031 ever again. and that you don't have to take on debt or overpay for property. And then you can buy at optimal timing, meaning if and when you want to, when the market shifts. And we sat there, like most of your listeners probably are right now, saying, I've never heard of this thing. You know, is this might be too good to be true. And how does this thing even work? And so that began my journey of creating not only a plan to implement this strategy, but really learning how to help my clients escape the external challenges of too much debt and overpaying in the short 45-day, 180-day window for the 1031 exchange, and the internal motivation, which is retiring from the toilets, trash, and liability, all so they can achieve their financial freedom and what they really picture a lot of their world looking like once they've made their wealth, which is a lot more time and energy.
All right. So it's interesting. Gives us a nice little backdrop there. I personally did a 1031 exchange. Listeners probably remember maybe a year ago now. Still working my way through that, you know, smaller multifamily deal that I was into. But I bought that property specifically for the reason that you just mentioned. It's a good deal. I'm going to make a profit. But, like, I'm used to doing much more quality, much more profitable, much more straightforward, safe, and easy deals. We did 223 houses we flipped last year. I mean, like 22,000, I forget what the exact number was, but it was over $5 million in profit amongst those 223 deals. So I'm accustomed to doing deals quickly, profitably, you know, very, very much approach. And I'm like feeling mired down in this little multifamily property that's in my portfolio now. And if I look back, it's because I was trying to fit it into this 180-day window to be able to, like, get that property closed before I had to pay taxes and lose the gain for, or the gain or the capital gain protection and deferral that the 1031 exchange provided. So maybe you could, like, run through using that one as an example of, I sold it and I had to rebuy something and settle it within 180 days. If I had known about the deferred sales trust, what would that deal look like for me then, Brett?
Great question. You know, what's the main difference between the deferred sales trust and a 1031 exchange, and why might someone use one versus the other? So just so your listeners know, I love the 1031 exchange, and at Capital Gains Tax Solutions, we want to provide all solutions, but we really want you, Dan, and the listener to have clarity on what is best for them. And it may or may not be best for you, depending on the deal you can find with a 1031. So the first thing we say is, hey, if you can find a deal which makes sense, and by that, I mean it's a forced appreciation opportunity based upon your return expectations and your goals. And you're buying the deal based upon the intrinsic value of the real estate, not just to defer the tax. Then by all means, do the 1031 exchange. But the 1031 by nature has some very, very inherent risks and challenges, especially in a highly priced seller's market, which I think the majority of the listeners listening would think we're in, except for maybe this shift in the coronavirus, which could really send things into a tailspin. We'll see. But that being said, the 1031's first challenge is what we call the 45-day window and 180-day sprint, okay, which often causes us to sell high and buy higher 180 days later. And so this is what our parents taught us not to do. What did our parents teach us to do? Our parents taught us to sell high and buy low, not sell high and buy higher 180 days later. And again, and too often, in a marketplace that's been saturated with tons of money, tons of investors, and lots of deals that have been flipped over the last 5 or 6 years, it's hard to find the forced appreciation deals, especially at a fair price. And so that's exactly what we're seeing in California, and I imagine a lot of places around the U.S. as well. So that's not good. The intent is to buy when it makes sense. So the solution is to use the deferred sales trust. Why? Because you can park the funds on the sidelines and buy back into real estate whenever you want to, all tax deferred, which I'll share a deal story right now. This is the most prolific deal story of the deferred sales trust. We call this the Monday morning quarterback story. And this gentleman sold in 2006. He kind of saw the writing on the wall. His prices were through the roof. He couldn't find a 1031 exchange property that made sense. So he sold and moved all of his funds into the deferred sales trust. Now, this is over a $20 million sale. This is a large property in the Midwest. This is a very sophisticated owner-operator. And so he sold, moved the funds into the deferred sales trust, and so now he's in a tax deferral state. And he waited 5 years before he got back into the marketplace. And guess what? That
wow.
property that he sold was foreclosed on from by the bank, from the buyer who bought it, And so who did the bank first call after they foreclosed? They called back the old owner and they said, hey, would you like to buy your property back? And he said, sure, but I have to buy it at a discount. And they said, how about 60 cents on the dollar? And so that's exactly what he did.
Wow.
For his deferred sales trust, he formed a JV partnership, formed an LLC, and he funded that LLC to buy back that property at 60 cents on the dollar. So he did the exact thing that we all wish we could do, sell high and buy low when it makes sense, which leads into the second thing that he was able to take advantage of, which was called a new depreciation schedule. So one of the number one ways, Dan, reasons to own real estate is for the depreciation you receive to offset the income that's coming in. However, the challenge is after you own long enough, especially multifamily, 27 and a half years, and if you've done multiple 1031 exchanges, your depreciation schedule not only travels, but it also dwindles eventually to zero. So the only way for you to get a new depreciation schedule is to buy a bigger and bigger property. Well, the solution is the deferred sales trust. Why? Because you get a brand new depreciation schedule. So let's say, Dan, you sold a $3 million property that you're fully depreciated on. If you do a 1031 and for another $3 million deal, guess what? You have zero depreciation because you didn't buy more property. But if you bought that same deal with the deferred sales trust, guess what? You have a brand new depreciation schedule of the full $3 million. Why? Because we didn't do a 1031. We just partnered with our deferred sales trust, which leads into the third reason that the 1031 is not so good. And we call this the dumb debt, right? Where you have to take on equal or greater value for the next property, which often means taking on equal or greater debt. Well, the challenge there is, again, if you're overpaying for a property already and you're taking on more debt, that's not the time to be in debt. That's how people got hurt. That's how people will get hurt because they overpay for properties before this crash or this correction. And now they're going to get caught here when values shift. The key thing is to go into debt when the market's low. When's that? Or when it's a buyer's market. When's that? Well, we think it was a couple of years ago when the values were low and the prices were, you know, to be had and value add was there. That's called smart debt. But dumb debt doubles down and overpays for property via a 1031 exchange. And that's not good. So I'm going to pause there because I know I said a whole lot and you might have some questions.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds like you've explained this to people in the past before. okay, so let's back it up to the $20 million that he parked in the deferred tax deferral state. He buys the property back at 60%, so we're saying $12 million, or it might have been hundreds of millions or whatever it was. Does he still have a bunch of cash sitting in that deferred tax state still after he makes that purchase again?
Yeah, great question. So, yeah, for his deal, it was about a $20 million deal, and so he bought that about 60 cents on the dollar. And he could get a loan or he could buy it all cash. It doesn't matter. For his particular deal, he only used a portion of this deferred sales trust. The other portion is still sitting in the deferred sales trust, and it's invested into stocks, bonds, mutual funds of his choosing. Hedged and protected, you know, not subject to a lot of what we're seeing right now at the marketplace. He's a real estate guy, but he essentially wants to keep his powder dry until he finds a deal. So that's what he did. And then he might find another real estate deal, or he might say, Hey, Dan, you got a syndication deal you're starting up. Here's $1 million for you to do that syndication deal. All tax deferred. Great. Or maybe he wants to diversify into some mobile home parks with a Kevin Bupp or something. Okay, great. Let's do $1 million over there with a Kevin Bupp. The point is you can diversify. The 1031 exchange doesn't allow you to diversify. Typically, you're trading one entity and one property for another property and another entity, typically in the same asset class in the same location or the general location, which by definition is not diversifying. The only way you really diversify by yourself is by getting more units. And so you're not dependent upon more, you know, this one single tenant or less tenants. But the true definition of diversification is not only it's multiple asset classes and it's multiple entities and it's multiple locations. And so the 1031 exchange really doesn't allow you to do that because the entity must move. Whereas the deferred sales trust, you can split and break it up. And also we don't have to replace any debt. So for him, he just bought the property, and for anyone else, you don't have to do any debt replacement requirement, which, by the way, you might sell a $3 million deal and find the perfect $1.5 million deal, but you pass up on it because you go, I got to do $3 million or greater, right? So you're not buying based upon the best deal. You're buying to satisfy requirements, whereas the deferred sales trust, forget all of that. That's out the door. all you need to do is go buy that property and keep the other bit, rest of the powder dry until you find a deal, which leads me to the third thing too. You mentioned all of these houses that you've been buying and selling. So we have clients who buy and sell in single family houses and do fix and flips. Now, as long as you're not a dealer, we can work with you and we can help you defer capital gains taxes on the sale of each one of those properties. So Dan, one of the other reasons to use a deferred sales trust over a 1031 exchange that often gets missed overlooked is the fact that you can sell individual single deals, like single family homes. Like, so let's say you had 200 single family homes. You can sell each one at a time and slowly sell them to the highest and best price buyer, which oftentimes means it's a single family homeowner who's buying it. And then you can move the funds into the trust and compile all of your money there. So you mentioned you said maybe about $5 million in profits or gains for your homes that you sold last year. Well, you probably paid somewhere between 30% and 50% in tax, especially if it was short term. You're looking at additional just ordinary income, which is big. As long as you're not a dealer, which you might be, but if you're not a dealer, we can sell each home that you have and we can move it into the deferred sales trust and defer all that tax. Whereas the 1031 exchange, the biggest challenge we found with owners of single family houses or smaller properties is they have to either compile them all together into a portfolio and sell it to one big investor, which then means they're probably selling at a discount if they want to try to perfect a 1031 exchange, given all the guidelines. So the intent is to get flexibility and to get higher prices for the sale prices. The challenge is it's hard to do that with the 1031. The solution is the deferred sales trust.
All right. So I have a couple more questions here. It almost sounds illegal. Do you get that often?
Yeah, that's the first question we get. And that's the first thing we thought is it sounds too good to be true. And how do we know this thing is legal? And how do I know I'm not going to go to jail? So if anyone ever approaches you, including us, with a brand new tax deferral strategy that you've never heard of, by the way, the deferred sales trust, not to be confused with a Delaware statutory trust. We both have DSTs. They often get confused. So we are a deferred sales trust. We are not a Delaware. We are not a 1031 exchange. But we are following a tax code. And here's the neat part. Our tax code goes back to the 1920s, whereas the 1031 exchange only goes back to the 1950s. Now, most people know a 1031 exchange, and they're very familiar with it. As long as you follow the rules, it's not illegal. The same thing is true with the deferred sales trust. So we're based upon IRC 453, which is also known as a seller carryback. So I'm going to walk you guys through just a traditional seller carryback, and so you understand the legality of it. So let's say, Dan, you own a $10 million property. Let's say right now, let's imagine it's a multifamily property. You've owned it for 30 years. You're fully depreciated. And you are considering selling, but if you sell, you're going to owe $4 million in tax, about 40%. And so you can do what's called a seller carryback, meaning you're going to carry paper. So Dan, if I gave you a $2 million down payment and you carried a note back for $8 million, how much actual receipt did you receive?
You'll have to fill me in again. I think it's
the answer is $2 million, right? So if I gave you a $2 million down payment, and you carried a note for $8 million, right? You received two. So the government says, okay, Dan, you received that too. We want our tax on that, right? You've got your gain on that. But that other $8 million is what's called a deferral state, right? You following me? You just did a carryback.
Correct.
You got it. So now let's shift it a little bit.
What
let's
was
imagine
the purchase
said,
price there? I think what I was getting lost was I was trying to figure out what the gain was going to be, and I was going to try to, you know, end run it, and that's where I think I was missing it. So we bought that property originally for how much to sell it for, 10?
You bought it for, let's say, $3 million, but you've depreciated it to zero over 30 years, so your basis is zero, and you're selling for $10 million, just to keep numbers simple. And so you have a $10 million gain. Of that, you owe about 40% in capital gains tax and depreciation recapture. So if you do nothing and you just sell, you're going to owe $4 million in tax. So you think you want to do a seller carryback, and because let's just imagine you don't want to do a 1031 again. And so I bring you a $2 million down payment. In that scenario, you've received two. You're going to pay tax on the two. But that other $8 million, you're in a deferral state. So you're just carrying back. Now, you could carry paper for 10, 20, 30 years, right, and just live off the interest. And those interest payments, you'll pay ordinary income tax, but that's just a seller carryback. Every CPA knows this. You know this, Dan. You've maybe done seller carrybacks in your lifetime. Everyone knows seller carrybacks. And that's the foundation of our structure, which I'm going to get to here in just a minute. But I want you to follow me here, Dan. So, Dan, but what if I gave you a zero down payment, Dan, If I gave you a zero down payment and you carried back a note for $10 million, how much actual receipt did you receive if I gave you zero?
I mean, up front it was zero, and then you're receiving small amounts on the seller carryback payments, right?
Sure. But just for right now, just imagine it's zero. So how much is triggered today if I gave you zero today?
Zero is triggered today.
You got it, okay? Now, let's insert the trust, okay? So, Dan, you find a $10 million buyer. We'll call him Joe, and Joe's about to buy your property. And you say, Joe, I want to sell, but you need to cooperate with my deferred sales trust. Doesn't make any difference to Joe, okay? And Joe brings the full $10 million through a loan or through cash, doesn't matter. But here's the difference. Right before escrow closes, guess what you do, Dan? You have the trust buy your position, and you carry 100% financing for the trust. So the trust gives you a zero down payment, Dan, and you carry a note for the full $10 million. Now, the trust immediately turns around. It's almost like a simultaneous close, and they sell it to Joe for that $10 million bucks. Joe takes the apartment complex the same way he would have, and he's gone. Now, follow me, Dan. If the trust bought it for $10 million and sold it for $10 million, how much gain does the trust have?
That trust would have zero gain.
You got it. So it has zero tax. Now, Dan, since you received a zero down payment from the trust in exchange for 100% financing note, a note that's owed to you for $10 million, how much tax is triggered today? Now, you remember, you always owe the four when you receive it, but how much is triggered today if you receive zero?
I mean, I guess zero would, and it'd be kind of the somehow stuck in the trust.
You got it. So there it is. This is why and how it's legal, okay? Because all you did, Dan, was do 100% seller carryback with the trust, okay? Now, there are some key things we have to follow. The trust has to be in it for business purpose, and I can't be a related party to you, so I can't be your brother or your cousin or someone else, right? I have to be able to make a profit in fees, and we do. But now the smoke clears, and by the way, we've done a couple thousand of these. That's the second question you want to ask. After you ask how does the thing work and what's the IRC tax code, you want to ask – how many of these have actually closed? A couple thousand at least, okay? Over 24-year track record. That's the next thing you want to ask. And the most important question you want to ask is, well, how many IRS audits have these things survived? And the answer is 14, the biggest one being $125 million in San Diego. And guess what? These were all no-change audits, not one single issue. And what did they say, Dan? They said they thought maybe we were doing something illegal, but as soon as we showed them how it all worked and we broke down exactly what happened, they said, you guys are just doing an installment sale. You're being creative with this third-party trust and creative with the zero down payment, but it's just an installment sale. Continue as you are. And we've had no issues with the IRS. We're batting 1,000 with them. So the next question you want to ask is, well, what happens if the IRS does come audit me? Who protects me? And so the tax attorneys provide what's called audit defense for the life of the trust at no additional cost to the buyer. Or to the seller and the note holder yourself. So you have protection there. We've been looked at by FINRA. We've been looked at by national law firms. We've been tested and tried just about every way you could think of. We've had formal audits. We have a PLR. But what I can tell you, it's 100% legal and it works every time. And we've had zero issues with the IRS. So that being said, next most important question that people have is, well, how do I know my funds are protected? The deal closes. It's sitting in the trust. What happens then? Well, at that point, you can invest it based upon your risk tolerance in different places. And your number one place will probably be real estate, right? And so you can start funding real estate developments. You can start funding fix and flips. You can start funding apartment complex buying. You can do it yourself or with partners. It really doesn't matter. It's kind of like a self-directed IRA at this point. The other places you can put it, though, are stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. And this is the part where 20% of it does need to stay in liquid, diversified investment-grade securities so that there's some reserve there to make sure it pays you back. But most of our notes earn 8% on average, and they net you 8% at the end of 10 years. But on a cash flow basis, you're going to live off of 6.5% and pay ordinary income tax on that along the 10-year period. But at the end of 10 years, what's cool is you can renew for another 10, and then renew for another 10. And essentially just keep this thing going for as long as you want and pass it on to your kids. But the best part is when you buy real estate at optimal timing. So I'm going to pause there again, make sure you caught all that.
So the ordinary income on the distributions, are they mandatory distributions that have to come out of there? Is there some reason why there has to be some payment coming out? Is that part of what makes it, you know, legal under the code?
Correct. There is some guidelines there that we want to follow. And the IRS doesn't want you to put never take anything out of the trust and never pay the tax. And so by nature of the way we set it up, we do 10-year notes, and somewhere within those 10 years, you're taking some payments. A lot of our clients will delay payments for 2, 3, or 4 years, which is and take zero payments and let the trust just compound. But we like to have clients take some payments within at least the first 3 to 4 years. And it can be a small amount. It doesn't have to be the full amount. And you'll pay ordinary income tax on that. But you might go buy a real estate deal and get some, brand new depreciation schedule and then do some accelerated depreciation on that. Right. And that'll offset some of the distributions. Or you might have a loss on a deal. A couple of years from now, you might have $1 million loss. And guess what? And that same year, you can call $1 million from the trust and offset it against your carry forward loss. So there's a number of ways to skin the cat. It's really your money. What would you like to do with it? And how would you like to receive it? But we're going to be that trusted advisor along the way to help you navigate all of those challenges.
Yeah, it's interesting. And so as you went on and through that entire process, you know, get to the part where 20% remains liquid. So earlier, I think you mentioned, hey, sometimes if you got the perfect property, the 1031 is the better window. And at the first, you know, first, as you were describing, I'm thinking, well, the 1031 sounds useless. Actually, until you get to the place where we're leaving 20% liquid. So really in the $20 million example, I think it was 20, right? That he would have had to have leave, $4 million in there so that payments could be distributed and he would make payments on that. Is that my understanding correct?
You got it. Yeah, and we're also lowering the risk, right? Because we don't want all $20 million to go into one deal and that deal fails. So hopefully you buy it at a discount, right? And so if he would have done a regular 1031, let's say he would have bought a $24 million deal and taken on debt and overpaid. But instead of buying that $24 million deal at 24 at the 1031, he buys it at $20 million, right? Because he bought it 4 years from now, let's just say, right? So he bought it at a discount. So even though that 20% needs to stay in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, which by the way, it's earning interest still there too, right? And it's still paying out. So it's not like you're earning nothing. It's just you don't have the full down payment potential with 100% of the money. You're giving up 20% to stay liquid. So by the way, that can be good too because banks, Dan, guess what? They want to see some liquidity, right? If they're going to loan you money, a lot of them are going to say, I don't want you 100% financed up the hill, right? We want to see liquidity. And this shows liquidity for you. So really, we don't find that really affects our real estate investors really that much.
And I assume, I'm kind of reading between the lines, that, you know, same example, there was $20 million there. $4 million is going to stay in marketable securities, liquid in some form or another as reserves. And that $16 million could, in theory, be used as a down payment on, let's say, a $60,000 apartment complex. And then the bank, the joint venture with this LLC that your operator creates with his trust, the $16 million comes from the trust and is put down. And then the bank financing is bringing in the remainder of the $44 million for that deal. So you can get financing in addition to – so it's sort of like a 1031 in that way where I can use it, but we're going to keep this percentage here as a reserve. So is that like that percentage, is that kind of like your company's safe kind of requirement in the structure that you're putting that together? Or is that like an IRC code that you have to have that liquidity?
It's the former. It's a great question. So we really have to make sure that we have audit protection, meaning we're following certain guidelines. And one of the things they're going to ask is it's commercially reasonable, right? Is there business purpose? And we need to follow those things. And also, we don't want you to have a bad experience. We've in the thousands of closes, a 24-year track record, no trust has failed legally or financially, okay? Meaning over any 10-year period, every single financial advisor has been able to pay back the agreed upon rate. Okay. And so we don't want that to fail, and we don't want you to have a bad experience. And we really just don't want too much risk on it. Again, it's the same reason that a bank would tell you, look, I'll give you a $44 million loan, Dan, but you need to keep $5 million at our bank account, right? You need to keep some liquidity here in case payments go, you know, you need to make some payments. It's still your money. You're still earning interest on it, but we want to make sure that there's some reserves here. So it's the same concept here. But the difference is we can actually invest it in stuff that's doing pretty well. And again, most of our notes, can just if you just stuck it into the securities, are earn 8%. And that's 8% at the end of the 10-year period.
Okay. So that's 8% per year?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it would be compounding if you're living off the interest. But yeah, I mean, some years might be 2%. But the blended rate will be 8% interest in there, net of all fees per year, and except for the tax attorney fee, which comes off the front.
Gotcha. And so are you guys managing that as float, almost as like a bank would do, and choosing certain instruments and securities, or is that literally the operator who selected these places for that to go? Because I imagine some people probably wouldn't be capable of making the right selection to weather storms like we're in right now.
Great question. Yeah. So you fill out what's called a risk tolerance questionnaire before the deal goes anywhere. Okay. And it's a 2-page questionnaire, and it talks about your risk. And based upon that, a score will be determined, and based upon that, an allocation will be presented, and then you approve or disapprove that allocation. So you kind of become like the chairman of the bank, right? So that $10 million is sitting there, and we got the risk tolerance questionnaire, and it's very mathematical. And then, yes, we actually hedge and protect a lot of our clients. So we're actually making money in this down market with the instruments that we have for our clients. So for example, when the market was down 37% to 40% in 2008, the instruments we were in were only down 4.5%. And so the same thing's happening now. And so the market's down over 34%. It's back up a little bit now the last couple of days, but we're hedged, and we're buying put options short, and we're waiting for the market to shift and go back up. And so, and then the next year after the 08 crisis, we were up 25%. Now, past results are never a prediction or a guarantee for future stuff. But that being said, yeah, we're very, very conservative, generally speaking, with that amount that's liquid. But that's all based upon what the note holder wrote in their risk tolerance questionnaire. And the best part is that other 80%, you can go do fix and flips. You can go do ground up development. You know, you can pretty much do as you were before, right? There's no, except for going overseas in real estate, as long as it's within the United States, you're in it's real estate or a business venture. You can do hard money lending if you wanted to. It's really a nice way to get some diversification and some options here.
How would that be calculated? If someone took the 80% and did hard money lending on deals they underwrote, et cetera, would that interest get to go into the trust and grow tax-free, or paying interest on that income that is growing? You're taking distributions for that exact amount. I mean, what would kind of be the requirement or suggestion of you guys in that situation?
Yeah, so let's walk through that. So what we always like to say is, what's your expertise, right? So let's just say it's Dan. Well, Dan says, well, I own apartments, I own fix and flips, that's my area. Okay, great. So we would first suggest that you stick with what you know, and or you partner with somebody who really knows that well and has a good track record, right? Same thing you would if you brought me $10 million and said, Brett, where should I invest it? Well, Dan, what do you know, right? And we're deferring $4 million in tax, but let's still stick to all those same principles, all right? That being said, how do we actually do this? Well, deal closes tomorrow, and you're like Brett, I have a deal lined up right now for $5 million. I want to go buy this apartment complex. Great. Let's form an LLC. How much of a down payment would you like to put down? Well, 50%. Okay. Let's fund that LLC with $2.5 million. Now, Dan, you're that managing member of that LLC, and we're going to do an 80-20 partnership, 80% to Dan and 20% to the trust. Even though the trust is the silent partner putting up 100% of the down payment, Dan is a sweat equity owner, right? He's buying. He's the GP. He's managing, owning, running the deal. He just happens to have a silent partner in the trust. So the trust funds the LLC. You buy that property. You own and operate it. Now, we have to pay back the investor, right? Who's the investor? That's the trust, right? So how do we do that? Well, we mirror the note. We typically mirror the 8%, and we put that as a preferred return, and then a 20% of all the profits. And so, Dan, fast forward. You sell it for a $1 million gain, okay, after all of the 8%. So you pay back the original 8%. You pay back the original $2.5 million, and there's $1 million left over. What happens? 80% goes to Dan, $800,000. 20%, $200,000 goes to the trust. At that point, Dan, you can just pay tax on that amount or do a 1031 with that amount. Or you can roll that into the DST as well as note number two. And so the first note would be the 2.5 plus the 1 plus the 8% preferred return. Plus, and then the second note would be $800,000. Now you have that all together and you go do it. We call it rinse, wash, repeat. And then you go do that again. Now, hopefully you bought that $5 million deal. You did accelerated depreciation, right? And so we got that additional cost seg and that depreciation offset against all of our income for that property, at least for the first few years, and also for the deferred sales trust. Now we got to make sure we own that long enough to make sure that we're not getting recaptured with that. But as long as we own it for about 5 years, we're going to do okay there. So I'm going to pause there. I said a whole lot, but hopefully that gave you kind of a picture. All along the way, you could have been taking interest payments off the trust, of which you're going to pay ordinary income tax, of which you're going to get a 1099 and report that to your CPA. Or you've just been letting it compound in there and just grow more and more and more. Therefore, you're essentially deferring the tax on your net income tax as well as on the capital gains tax.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. So what happens if you want to dissolve the trust at some point? I do it, $10 million, and then for some reason I'm like, you know what? I need to pull this all apart. I mean, at what point does it end, or when it goes on to the heirs? I mean, you know, what's that look like?
First of all, no exit fee, so we don't trap you there. So there's no, but you can cash out whenever you want. We have to schedule the note. Most of our notes have a balloon payment coming due at 10 years, right? Just interest-only payments. However, you may want to cash out all or a portion of it along the way. We'll just amend the note. It's kind of like a refinance where you just change the amortization schedule and or make a bulk sum payment. As long as we schedule it, it's just pretty easy. It takes a couple of days to schedule it, and then you pay it. At that point, you're going to pay the tax. However, Dan, most of our clients like to pay the tax the second day to never. And so what they're going to do is they're just going to keep it in there forever. And they're just going to live off the interest, pay tax along the way. And then if they have a carry forward loss, going to offset it. But it's totally flexible. It's your money. How and when would you like to receive it? But at the end of the day, when people look at the tax bill of $4 million, most of the time they say, you know what, how about I just keep the full $10 million in there and let's just keep this thing rolling.
So does that occur like, you know, that full amount of the gain that went in is the full amount of gain that you're going to pay the tax on when it comes out?
Correct. So you're going to, depending on the rate of capital gains tax in that given year. So it might be higher, it might be lower in that given year. That's one thing that you can't count on for sure. It's probably going to be at the same or higher. Let's assume that. In that given year, you're going to pay it. But you're already at 37 to 40%. So, I mean, are you going to get out? If you're not getting out at 40, you're probably not getting out at 50 or 60, right? But yeah, so it's either that on the capital gains tax or it's the interest rate. Now, you might move to Florida, Dan. Let's say 10 years from now, you retire and you move to Florida or you move to Texas or someplace that's tax a little more tax friendly. And you've been delaying those payments. And guess what? Well, now you start to turn on those payments, and now you're living in Florida, you've established residency, and you're going to pay the income tax in that given place. So that's also, we call that tax engineering. That's a smart way to do it. It all depends, really whatever you want. But yeah, as you receive payments, you're going to pay ordinary income tax on that, depending on what state you live in. And as you receive principal pay down, you're going to pay capital gains tax.
Long-term capital gains.
Correct, long-term.
Okay. So it doesn't really remove, I mean, you know, it's a gain. The gain is put into the trust. And then if you were to unwind it, you're going to have that gain.
Yeah, all the proceeds are put into the trust. It's the same thing with the 1031 exchange. Like, you're not getting rid of it. You're just deferring it. So we're deferring the tax until you sell and don't do a 1031 or sell and not do a deferred sales trust or just cash out of the deferred sales trust. It's in a deferral state until you receive it.
Makes sense. So at what kind of price points does this start to make sense for both you and for an investor? We have someone listening and they've got 10 properties worth $1 million and there's $300,000 in gain. Is this something where that's kind of the low end of where the paperwork and kind of the nuts and bolts start to make sense, or is it higher or lower than that amount? What do the average deals look like for you guys?
Great question. Our average deal is $2.6 million in proceeds, and we're deferring somewhere around $400,000 or $500,000 in liability. Our minimum deal is $500,000 of proceeds and $100,000 of liability. So if you're selling those deals, we would say, well, what's your proceeds? $500,000 or more? Okay, good. What's your liability? And you say, let's say $300,000 of liability. Not to confuse with gain. If the gain is $300,000, then you're probably looking at 37 to 40% of that, which let's say it's 115, which would still work in that scenario. So
gotcha.
We have a deferred sales charge calculator that takes all the guesswork out of all of this. Just you can go to our website, capitalgainstaxsolutions.com, and you can just answer a few questions there. That'll give you a side-by-side comparison of do the deferred sales trust versus just pay the tax, and you can get some clarity on that right away.
My final question before we get to our wrap-up here, as our time is winding down a bit, give me some examples of some unique. We talked about real estate where this works, but I know from our previous conversations you guys have done this with some other interesting asset classes that might be surprising to people.
Yeah, great question. So just to clarify, the 1031 exchange only works for investment property. Okay, they've actually restricted it even just to be super restrictive. So basically, it's just like kind investment property. The deferred sales trust, on the other hand, works for investment property. It works for high-end primary homes. It works for carried interest, by the way. It also works for captive insurance. It works for horses. I'm doing a horse deal in Kentucky. It works for Bitcoin. It works for optometrists, dentists, private practice owners, veterinarians. You name it, we've done it, and it works for those. So if you have a business, if you have real estate, if you have anything else that has is highly appreciated, artwork, collectibles, you should talk to us. You should at least take a look at what we have to offer. We don't charge unless and if you do the deal, so there's no risk and no obligation to you. It's just you either want to pay the tax or you want to defer it, and we'll walk you through that. The other thing, too, is we can save a failed 1031 exchange. So we're actually saving one deal today, actually closing today. It's a $7.6 million apartment sale in Georgia, and he paid off about $4 million in debt, and he is putting his proceeds into the trust. Two reasons. One, he can't find a deal right now. But two, the coronavirus has hit the fan, so everything is up in turmoil right now. And three, he wants to buy at optimal timing when the deals make sense. And so he is putting all of – we're saving his failed 1031. He's putting all of his – it's about $3.1 million into the trust after everything. And he is closing and he is waiting, okay? So we can save a failed 1031. Now, you need to work with the QI company that will allow you to do that. And we have those QI companies. Guess what? Your 1031 exchange company doesn't want you to know about the deferred sales trust. They also don't want – also your commercial real estate broker doesn't want you to know about it. Why? Because the 1031 is their best friend for them getting paid. When they hear 1031, they think about a paycheck. And I get it. That's where I was, and I still help people do 1031s. But it's not always in your best interest. And so, again, we just encourage you to know all of those things. And the last one I'll leave with you before we go to the lightning round is what's called estate tax. For anyone who's listening to this podcast – and you're faced with $22 million or more in your estate and you're married, or $11 million and you're single and you're married, you're faced with what's called the death tax, okay? A lot of people get confused and think that I get the stepped-up basis and I can just 1031 die, get the stepped-up basis, and then I walk away tax-free. That's only true for capital gains tax, okay? It is not true for the estate tax. So the intent is to get money outside the taxable estate before you pass, so that you can save on that 40%. So let's walk through a scenario, Dan. Let's imagine Dan's married and he has $52 million estate and all $52 million inside his taxable estate. Well, the first $22 million is exempt, but if he were to pass today and his wife passes today, the estate passes that $52 million. Now, he gets a stepped-up basis for the capital gains tax, but that $30 million that's left above and beyond the $22 is going to be taxed at 40%. That's a $12 million tax. Ouch, right? That's terrible. Now, the intent is to get that out. So what could he do? Well, the solution is the deferred sales trust. Now, he may have tried some FLPs. He may have done some gifting to his kids. But what we found, most high net worth individuals, before they meet us, they've done all that and they can't get it out fast enough. They can't get it out. Yep. They run out of time, and they also run out of exemptions. So the solution is the deferred sales trust. You could sell a property tomorrow, Dan, $30 million, and you can move all of it into the deferred sales trust in one single transaction. So not only are you deferring all the capital gains tax, you're getting out of debt, you're positioning yourself to buy at optimal timing, you're diversifying your portfolio, but more than that, you are moving it outside your taxable estate and you just saved $12 million for your estate. Why are we doing all that, right? Well, we hope that not only can you have more wealth for you and your family, that's the first thing, but we're really hoping that you're going to be more charitable. You're going to be an opportunity for you to give more. Now, you don't have to do that. You don't have to be charitable with this, but if you want it to, that could fund some of the people that are hurt the most, right? That are really are in the darkest places. And so if we can spread this message to those who are high net worth and who are considering or have estate tax issues, we can really help a lot of people, which is part of the $17 to $20 trillion that's passing from one generation to the next in the next 20 years. And this is known as the largest wealth transfer in the history of the world, and it's by the baby boomers. In fact, there's about 10,000 turning 65 every day and about 77 million baby boomers in the U.S. alone. And all of this massive amount of wealth is going to transfer, and they're looking for ways out of the toilets, the trash, the liability. They're looking for estate tax solutions. They're looking for debt freedom and no more 1031 exchanges. And we believe that's the perfect storm. And we have the perfect solution in the deferred sales trust to solve all of those. Also, they can create and preserve more wealth. Also, so they can give more should they choose to do so.
Interesting. Can you define QI company?
It's a qualified intermediary. So a 1031 exchange qualified intermediary. You need one for every 1031 exchange you're going to do.
Gotcha. All right, cool. You have gone through a lot of information. I'm curious if there's any books maybe on this exact topic that you could recommend, or even something that has to do with tax or you know, real estate in general that the listeners might find valuable.
Yeah, I'm writing a book now. It's called Escape Feeling Trapped by Capital Gains Tax, and that'll be out here in the next 90 days or so. But you can also go to my website and look up our Escape Feeling from Capital Gains Tax guide. It's kind of a shorter version, just a couple pages. There's no real like books per se on the deferred sales trust. I mean, you could read real estate books that have to do with seller carryback, anything that has to do with IRC 453. We are specialized and proprietary. We have thousands of business professionals across the U.S., but it does take a team of trusted professionals. We say, don't try this at home. We've done this before. The brain surgeons have never lost a patient, and our patient's never gone to jail. And we really want you to bring in your trusted advisors, but realize that your trusted advisors, if they would have known about it, they would have told you about it, but they don't know about it until they talk with us and get to know it and get to know us. So just take it slow, get to know us, understand it, go to our website, go to our YouTube channel, search Capital Gains Tax Solutions, and just start to slowly get educated in how this thing all works.
Yeah, usually I would ask for the crown jewel of wisdom that you would share with yourself, and I would have picked somewhere in the 2006 to 2010 year. I would assume that this is it. But is there anything else that you might consider the crown jewel that you would pass on to somebody with a little less experience or even yourself at a lesser experience time?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, for the business professional listening to this, you know, the moment you start adding value is the moment you know more about your prospect or your target or your client's property and or their situation, a way to solve it. That's the moment you start adding value, not just calling and talking to people. So make sure you're bringing value by having tools and knowledge that's going to solve their pain points. And likewise, if you're the commercial real estate operator or owner and or investor and you're trying to call the mom and pops to sell their to buy their property, bring a solution. We think the deferred sales trust is the number one thing facing baby boomers to solve their problems. They've heard the 1031s from everybody, so come to them with something else that's different. So when you reach out to them, say, hey, look, what are you trying to do? Well, I want to be done with the toilets, trash, and liability. I don't want to – a lot of them don't want to trade. This is Peter's story. He's a baby boomer. He hit 18 units, and he sold. And he goes, Brett, I don't want to trade 18 units for 36 units. I have 18 problems now. I don't need 36 problems. So what I would encourage you to do is – find a way that adds value, and it, whether it be the deferred sales trust or something else, and then talk about that and help them implement that so that you can win the deal. They want to sell it to you, or they want you to list their property. If you focus on them and their and solutions for them, you're going to win more business. So that's what I would have done earlier, and I suggest you do the same.
Nice. Well said. Is there any other information, places, URLs, or contact info for listeners who want more about this or just to reach out to you?
Yeah, just go to capitalgainstaxsolutions.com, and then you can also go to LinkedIn, BiggerPockets, Facebook. I'm on all of those. YouTube, we release videos once or twice a week. We have webinars on there, and we also have our podcast that's launching, Capital Gains Tax Solutions Podcast, of which, Dan, I'd love for you to be a guest on the show. And you can learn more about this deferred sales trust solution, as well as cost segregation, as well as traditional installment sales, as well as 1031 exchanges, Delaware statutory trust, all of those things, so that you can clarify what is best for you.
All right. Well, Brett, hey, I appreciate you taking this hour. I got like tons of notes. I'm sure this is one that the listeners will have to go back through, including myself, once or twice to just catch all the details. We went through a lot of info. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks, Dan. My pleasure.
And thank you for tuning in to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Next episode coming up is my personally most anticipated episode to date. Specifically, I'm referring to my own excitement to host the guest, Peter Conti, and his topic, negotiating no money down commercial real estate deals. As a first ever, that upcoming episode is a new experimental long form version of the show, allowing Peter and I to dive in extra deep, unrushed by time constraints, into the topic of negotiating those no money down commercial deals. Allow me to pause here for just a moment and provide a bit of a timestamp here in the REI Diamond Show catalog about the COVID pandemic we are currently living through. I've been lucky so far not to get sick or personally know anyone who has. That's not the case for many people around the world, and my prayers go out to those whom the tragedy has struck much closer to home. This thing is serious. That said, I am never one to shy away from sharing my own opinion on the course of the real estate market. Even though unemployment is currently sky high and business is currently posting its worst decline numbers ever, the 1-2 punch of low interest rates and sky high stimulus will likely keep the housing prices stable. And then when you throw in the fact that many would-be sellers don't want potentially infected strangers in their house, now holding off on listing their properties on the market or even pulling their homes off the market right now, postponing their, you know, potential real estate sale by a year or maybe two, you might even begin to think that low supply will be the bigger problem, even if demand does fall a bit once things open back up. On March 5th, I gave a presentation that the real estate market wouldn't crash in the next 5 years, and I'm not changing that prediction or my investment philosophy. The low supply in the market from years of underbuilding combined with the rising demand of the millennial home buyer, you know, plus the low interest rates, I believe will result in a strong rebound. That said, there is one caveat. Buyers will prefer either brand new homes or fully renovated and vacant homes, not lived in. Exactly the product that you and I and the rest of the fix and flip real estate industry provide. Repeat, our product will be the hottest product in the market once COVID has run its course. The buyers view them as safe, uninfected homes. And to truth be told, any of the rehabs that I've placed on the market in the last 60 days are either sold or have tremendous activity and multiple offers since listing. The buyers are loving the vacant renovated houses. And a surprising number of buyers are still making the move, even with the shutdown. So know that if you flip houses and you have no product under construction right now, you are likely missing the boat once the market opens up again. It's okay. There's always next year, right? Me, I am still buying and selling and buying more, set for Diamond Equity to have its best year ever. So if you have a deal, please email me details or send them to me directly through the form at reidiamonds.com. I personally check both of those channels and reply quickly. Quick note where you can find this show. We post the episodes on YouTube. We also syndicate to the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and quite a few others. And if you'd like, I can send you an email each Saturday when the new episode is available. Just head over to reidiamonds.com and sign up. Do you currently have cash sitting on the sidelines, but you are not interested in doing any real estate projects yourself? I am happy to send you deals that you can place capital passively. Go to www.fundrehabdeals.com, sign up, and I'll email you on the next batch of closings we have coming up. We have reached the end, my friend. Catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.